This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. Ali Baltazar is producing. Talk Louisiana is the show, and your numbers are 297-5633 in Baton Rouge. Outside the area, toll-free 877-217-5757. You can email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Later in the hour, we will hear from former Governor Buddy Romer. We begin with advocate reporter Rebecca Allen. She's been covering various topics of interest for the last 7 years for the state's largest newspaper and is a graduate of the Manship School of Mass Communication at LSU. And 5 days ago, LSU lost a fraternity pledge in 18-year-old Maxwell Groover. And Rebecca Allen, in the days since then, has done some significant reporting regarding the long history of the Greek system at LSU and, of course, the latest tragedy. And it is a pleasure to talk with you, Rebecca Allen.
Hey, Jim.
Your latest story is about LSU banning tailgating for Greek groups. That includes Saturday's game against Syracuse. This is something that has not been met with great glee by people in the Greek system. What's your take on what's going on campus right now?
Well, it's hard to kind of get the actual students to talk to us right now. They've been advised not to talk to the media, so we haven't been able to totally flesh out where they are on this, but we have talked to some of them off the record, and obviously they're not happy about it, and this is very new. This is a really new situation, and with the game on Saturday, I think that you're going to see some logistical questions and enforcement issues when we're dealing with telling fraternity brothers and sorority sisters who have this very long history of tailgating together as Greek organizations and saying, you guys got to spread out. You can only be in groups of 10. You can't wear your Greek symbols or colors or anything like that. So it's going to be a challenge for the university, I think.
Well, the services for Maxwell Groover were held at Christ the King Church at LSU. 700 people showed up, mostly fellow students. And this is a young man who just arrived from Georgia to attend Louisiana State University. Has there been more information about what happened to Maxwell Groover?
No, there hasn't. We don't actually know. We don't know officially what happened the night that he died. There's obviously been a lot of rumors, but right now all we know is that for sure is that he died. In his or that he was brought from the fraternity house to Our Lady of the Lake. Early Thursday morning, where he was pronounced dead. He was brought there for a medical emergency, but we haven't been provided any details officially yet about what happened in the hours before he died.
It is thought that alcohol consumption was involved.
Yes, it is. The preliminary autopsy did confirm that there were high levels of alcohol in his blood and some trace levels of THC, but we won't know the actual cause of death for a few weeks now, and we won't know exactly, what his blood alcohol level was until that time.
Now, this comes 20 years after Ben Wynn died at LSU. He was a pledge for Sigma Alpha Epsilon, and it was after a night of heavy drinking at the old Murphy's right off campus, and his blood alcohol level, by the way, was 0.588. You note in the Sunday story that you wrote about LSU's rocky history with Greek life that there have been at least a dozen incidents of significance since that happened 20 years ago. Is Greek life perhaps going to change, or is it too early to tell?
I think it is too early to tell. You're seeing a lot of high-profile response from, because this is on the sort of the heels of the Penn State death. And I think that, social media gets the stories out a lot more. So I think that LSU's response was a lot more severe and swift than maybe we've seen in previous years. But, it's been 20 years since the last one. It's going to be, a lot has changed since then. So, Greek life is, it's a tradition here in the South, and in large universities, I think that there would be there'd be a ton of outrage if they tried to shut it down. But you've seen in some other schools where they've really tried to shut down drinking on campus. There's no more keg parties and all day drinking parties at Penn State, and you see some other universities who have tried to eradicate drinking on in residential housing.
All right.
So those are some things that could be explored.
A listener asks if you or I were members of the Greek system. I was not. I don't know about you.
I was not.
Okay. Well, that may or may not be relevant to reporting about this, but there have been fraternities kicked off campus. Right now, there's some that are off the campus, correct?
There are. There's four fraternities that are kicked off campus right now, and there's one sorority. Those are Acacia, Sigma Chi, Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, Omega Psi Phi, and Kappa Alpha Psi. And actually, that doesn't count Phi Delta Theta. So actually, there's five now.
Well, and
five fraternities.
Phi Delta Theta is certainly going to have to answer a lot of questions, and there could be criminal charges brought in this case. That is an ongoing part of this story as well, isn't it?
Sure, yeah. A lot of people are speculating. It could be illegal sale of alcohol all the way up to homicide. It's definitely too early to say right now, but, we had a story that ran this weekend where a lot of defense attorneys speculated that negligent homicide would be up for consideration. And if there were, if there was any evidence that people had physically forced him to drink, then that's when you see homicide on the table.
Mm-hmm.
But it's tough, and that's not something that we've seen here before with Benjamin Wynn. It ended up being just some fines that were paid, and ultimately the fraternity pled no contest to several misdemeanor counts of illegal purchase of alcohol.
In your story, going back to 1997 and these 12 incidents that have involved, in some cases, Greek entities being shut down, you note some pretty egregious complaints and allegations against these people, including mistreatment of animals.
Yeah, this timeline that we created that's on the Advocate's website currently, that is just, it's not even a complete and comprehensive timeline. It's just what we could find, in our archives, where we could tell that there was definitely disciplinary action that had been taken. And just from going through our clips, it looked like things were maybe more raucous back in the late 90s, in the years when Benjamin Wynn died. The cruelty to animals charge came from a Kappa Sigma frat party in 1998. It was called a barnyard party, and the university charged them with cruelty to animals because a sheep died. Don't ask me how, but there was also a goat at the party and chickens. And then there were additional issues that came out of that party because, women were, I guess they said, sort of being hazed themselves that were attending this party. They were writing, vulgar words across their bodies as they entered. So there were just a lot of problems with that party.
And you note that one fraternity was removed from campus after a lawsuit was filed against the chapter alleging a pledge was stripped to his boxer shorts in a sugarcane field, beaten, and forced to inhale rubbing alcohol. Another one was kicked off campus after a pledge was paddled and caned to the point that he had to have surgery to remove infected and dead tissue from his buttocks. So is this the kind of thing that should be accepted at Louisiana State University? And these houses are on campus. They pretty much have a rule of their own, and right now they're under intense scrutiny. Is it your impression that King Alexander, the president of the university, is going to focus a microscope on what's going on?
Well, he said that he's, taking a zero tolerance policy. I mean, it's not for me to say, really. you know, what's appropriate, but I think you've seen a lot of outrage from alumni and from people who are there and parents. So I think this is going to get some fresh scrutiny for sure.
Mm-hmm. And this Maxwell Groover story has all kinds of rumors. I'm sure you've heard them. And if I would say, Rebecca, that if 1/10 of them are true, it's a serious case, very serious.
Oh, yeah, there are a lot of really terrible rumors out there for sure.
When will we know what happened? When is the toxicology report going to be released?
Toxicology, they said, could be up to 4 weeks, maybe sooner. And then we're sometimes these investigations go for a really long time. We're waiting on some police reports. So, you know, we're following it very closely.
Well, we will follow it with you. Thanks for joining us, Rebecca Allen of the Advocate.
Thanks so much, Jim.
We'll be back after this timeout on 89.3 WRKF with more Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. In our next segment, we'll hear from former Governor Buddy Romer, his first major broadcast interview since suffering a stroke 3 years ago, and his speech is a bit impaired, but the governor still has a fertile mind, which is evident in his book, Scopina, and that's what he'll be talking about, his formative years growing up in northwest Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number, and the other story involving the LSU campus is that an arrest has been made, armed with DNA evidence taken from shell casings left behind when a 59-year-old employee of, Donald Smart was a 49-year-old man who worked at Louis, who was killed last Thursday by someone, but a 59-year-old black man was also gunned down last week on Florida Boulevard in Baton Rouge. Police have arrested 23-year-old suspect Kenneth James Gleason, a white man who previously had been questioned and had been released on charges unrelated to these shootings. But District Attorney Hiller Moore held up evidence photos of the suspect's car during an afternoon news conference, and Kenneth James Gleason has been booked on 2 counts of first-degree murder and illegal use of a weapon in the shooting deaths of 2 Baton Rouge men last week. Gleason is an honor graduate of Baton Rouge High, one of the great high schools in America, an Eagle Scout, not the kind of guy you would suspect of being involved in something like this, but Hiller Moore, I spoke to him this morning at Louis, I might add, and he said that the evidence in his view is overwhelming, including fingerprint evidence. So we'll see what happens in this case, but a terrible tragedy, 2 men shot at random and dead as a result of senseless violence in our community. And this is something that is not unique to any particular area any longer. Another story that has not received as much attention that is certainly worthy of discussion is that a man who formerly served on the East Baton Rouge Parish Recreation and Park Commission was fatally shot outside his house in Pride on Tuesday evening. Deputies responded to reports of a shooting, and Carol Breeden, 66 years old, pronounced dead at the scene. According to the East Baton Rouge Parish Sheriff's Office, Breeden was a former BREC commissioner. BREC Communications Director Cheryl Michelet has confirmed this. And at this point, there is no suspect in that killing. Another major story of national proportion involving Louisiana is U.S. Senator Bill Cassidy and his health care proposal that he is floating in the U.S. Senate, along with his fellow Republican Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. Governor John Bel Edwards, who will be on the air later this afternoon with his monthly show at 2 o'clock on this station, WRKF, and State Health Department Secretary Dr. Rebecca Gee, in separate letters say they believe Senator Cassidy's plan to dramatically overhaul the Affordable Care Act, commonly referred to as Obamacare, would harm Louisiana, likely to the benefit of other states. Now, here is Senator Cassidy 1 week ago today commenting when he introduced this legislation.
We take all the dollars that are... We repeal the individual mandate. We repeal the employer mandate. Those penalties go away. We get rid of the medical device tax. We take the dollars that are left and we split it among the states. The way we decide what state gets what is we look at everybody in the nation who earns between 50 and 138% of federal poverty level. Then we take each state's percent of that national population. And that is where you begin. Beginning in 2021, the dollars are allocated depending on what percent you have of the federal, of the total national population within that income level. The state can spend it on those who are a little bit richer or a little bit less rich, but that is where we decide to spend. That's how we divide the money.
All right, that's Senator Bill Cassidy, who is a doctor, and he got a lot of attention about a month ago when he said that any bill that he would favor would have to include the so-called Jimmy Kimmel test. Jimmy Kimmel, the late-night talk host, had a child with a congenital heart condition that had to have emergency surgery, and Jimmy Kimmel, in a tearful description of what happened to his child, said that no American family should have to endure the uncertainty of not knowing whether their child would have sufficient health care in an emergency of this kind. And Bill Cassidy at that time said that he agreed with Jimmy Kimmel and that any bill would have to pass the Jimmy Kimmel test. Well, last night, Jimmy Kimmel took to the air and tore into Senator Cassidy.
And this guy, Bill Cassidy, just lied right to my face. Do you believe that every American, regardless of income, should be able to get regular checkups, maternity care, et cetera, all of those things that people who have health care get and need?
Yep.
So yep is Washington for nope, I guess. And I never imagined I would get involved in something like this. This is not my area of expertise. My area of expertise is eating pizza, and that's really about it. But we can't let him do this to our children and our senior citizens and our veterans and or to any of us. And by the way, before you post the nasty Facebook message saying I'm politicizing my son's health problems, I want you to know I am politicizing my son's health problems because I have to. My family has health insurance. We don't have to worry about this, but other people do. So you can shove your disgusting comments where your doctor won't be giving you a prostate exam once they take your health care benefits away. It's true.
All right, that's Jimmy Kimmel last night attacking Senator Bill Cassidy. And a few weeks ago, they were on the same page and appeared to like one another and be in accord that the bill would have to pass the, quote, Jimmy Kimmel test. An analysis from the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities estimates Louisiana stands to lose about $3.2 billion in federal health care funding over the next decade if Senator Cassidy's proposal is successful. His plan, which is backed by U.S. Senators Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, Dean Heller, Republican of Nevada, and Ron Johnson, Republican of Wisconsin, is largely seen as a last-ditch effort. Remember a few weeks ago when it was a 51-49 actually was the vote, because if it had been 50-50, Mike Pence, the vice president, would have cast the deciding vote in favor of basically repealing and replacing Obamacare. But John McCain got out of his hospital bed and came to Washington and cast the deciding vote to keep Obamacare as we know it for at least the time being. Some believe that Senator McCain will change his mind on this one because his best friend in the Senate is none other than Lindsey Graham, the co-sponsor of this bill with Senator Cassidy. Lindsey Graham, the senator from South Carolina who ran for president last year. Mitch McConnell, the Republican majority leader from Kentucky, has acknowledged that this is pretty much a last-ditch effort. And Bill Cassidy has credibility on these issues. He's a physician who's been promoting various health care laws for more than a year. He has said his goal is to put more decisions in the hands of states. A key component of the Cassidy-Graham plan is providing block grant funding, which would loosen federal restrictions, but also would reduce funding. So we'll see where this goes. But nearly 435,000 people in Louisiana, the working poor, have signed up for Medicaid expansion since Obamacare took effect in July of 2016. Governor Jindal had refused the Medicaid expansion under Obamacare of the Affordable Care Act, but Governor John Bel Edwards welcomed it, and now 435,000 people in our state, about one-tenth of our citizens, have taken advantage of it. And today is noted, Governor John Bel Edwards will have his monthly radio show, and I'm sure this will be a significant topic of discussion. But Bill Cassidy, who at one time was a liberal Democrat who supported Kathleen Blanco over Bobby Jindal for governor in 2003, then became a Republican and was elected first to the Louisiana Senate, then to Congress, and now to the U.S. Senate. He has taken a hard right turn, and he has potentially the votes in the U.S. Senate to get his plan to repeal and replace Obamacare through the hoops. Buddy Romer, the former governor, is next. Now the news with Karen Henderson on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster, and a distinct pleasure. We're joined by former Louisiana Governor Charles Elson Buddy Romer III. He was governor of Louisiana 1988 to 1992, and he is now an author. He's written about his early years. Grew up in North Louisiana at Scopina, and that's the book, Scopina, A Memoir of Home. And before we get to the first 16 years of your life, which are displayed in quite vivid terms in your book, this came about, Governor, after you had your stroke 3 years ago, July of 2014. That's when you decided, I'm going to write this book. What happened?
Well, I had time. That's number one. And my doctors told me it might be good therapy for me. They pointed out that some people who stutter, when they sing, don't stutter. So the doctor said, you always read books, buddy. Why don't you write one? So I started out 3 years ago on my life on Scopini. It started in October of 1949, and it went through August of 1960.
So you were 5 years old in 1949 and grew up right after World War II. Heady times for the country, and you were in an area that was beautiful and rich, and certainly you were blessed with a lot of loving people in your life.
I was lucky. This book is really about my father and mother. My mother died this year at 92. And my dad died a couple years ago at 89. And since they weren't here, I chose the time of my life when they had the most effect on me. That was at Scopina in the decade of 1950. White, black, farming, non-farming, it was a special time. And what I've done is take the instances, I can already say that, of the 1950s and put them down in writing. It's about my mother and father foremost.
People may not realize it, but you also spent a lot of time in those years in New Orleans, didn't you?
I did. My granddad and his wife lived in New Orleans. His name was Pete Romer. It's in the book. And we would take the train to New Orleans and visit with my granddad for a week or two. He lived on Bourbon Street in New Orleans. So I grew up at 6, 7, 8 on Bourbon Street. It was quite an experience.
Right down the street from Lindy Boggs, right?
Yes, one block over from her.
But most of your life is affected by those early years at Scopina. You're the oldest of five children, and your mother and father, both exceptional people, both very bright people. You graduate from high school when you're 16, but before that, were you regarded as a child prodigy of sorts?
You know, some people thought of me that way. I was introduced as a smart one when I was a kid. My brother said, where does that leave me? My brother, Danny, went to Harvard after me and Harvard Business School. So he was pretty smart, too. But, yeah, I skipped the fifth grade, and I started college at the age of 16.
At Harvard.
Yeah.
And that was the fall of...
I don't like to say that. Yeah. I graduated from Harvard in 1964, and I graduated from the Harvard Business School in 1967.
But you went there at 16 in 1960, the year and the very semester that John Fitzgerald Kennedy was elected President of the United States.
I met him, John Kennedy, after the presidential race in December of 1960. He came up to Harvard as the prospective president-elect. He was quite a guy. He asked me about Russell Long.
And you were 17 by then, and you already knew about Russell Long.
Yes, I knew about Russell Long.
You write about it in the book, but when did you first think of possibly delving into politics?
I practiced speaking when I was in the whole field for hours each day. And I swear I could make people laugh or cry in the cotton fields. I was 11, 12, 13, 14, somewhere in there. I decided that cotton was too tough, too hard. And so I said, I want a job where there's no heavy lifting and most of the work is indoors. I thought of politics.
But you actually worked in the fields.
Yes. Dad, this book is about the lessons learned. And my family worked every day except Saturday, sometimes Saturday, and Sunday in the fields every day. I checked bugs. I did irrigation monitoring. And I did hoeing work in the fields.
And you would give speeches?
Yes. When I walked behind the hoe hands, we had about 200 to 300 hoe hands, mostly black, but some white, young, but mostly old people. When I walked behind them to check how we were doing, I would give a speech like an imaginary office. And I'm sure the whole hands thought, who is this weird nut? I did it for hours every day.
Those times you also write about, they're remembered by many Americans as idyllic times, but of course we were grappling with the issue of race, which would boil to the surface a decade later. How was it in the 1960s when you'd have conversations about race?
It was fairly quiet in Scopina. Dad was a good leader. I never heard my father use the N-word, not once. He believed that people were people. And that's the way he raised my sister's brother and I. But in 1950s, Shreveport, Bossier, Skopina was a little bit quiet compared to the rest of the country. There were certain signs in the rest of the country, and we debated what role we should play as a family. It's in the book, but it was quiet compared to the marches in Virginia and Alabama.
This was in the 1950s, and then, almost 40 years later, you had your career path changed remarkably by the issue of race. How was that experience?
I was very well prepared, because a key thing for me was treating people like they were real. And I relied on that time and time again as a young man. And in my political career, black and white, there's no difference, except that the black person has been trampled on over time. No question of that.
It is amazing that we're still grappling with this today.
Unbelievable. So many haters, and David Duke and his people were so hateful and still are so hateful. I don't think they represent a majority of the people in Louisiana.
We're visiting with former Louisiana Governor Charles E. Buddy Romer III. The book is Skopina, a memoir of home, and it is out and about, and there will be a book signing this weekend in Baton Rouge, and we'll talk more about that and with Governor Romer after this pause. This is Jim Inkster, and our special guest is former Louisiana Governor Buddy Romer, and he will be at the Books-A-Million in Baton Rouge at 1 o'clock on Saturday, though only one left in Baton Rouge, Books-A-Million at Town Square, 1 o'clock Saturday, and then next Thursday, 6 p.m. at Barnes & Noble at City Place. And he's talking about his book, the first book, probably the first of a few or more that the governor will write, Skopina, A Memoir of Home. Earlier we talked with Governor Romer about how at this stage in his life he had a stroke 3 years ago when he was approaching his 71st birthday, and he decided he wanted to write, and that is what he is doing, and he has written prolifically about his formative years at Skopina with his mother and father, Adeline and Charles Budgie Romer. Now, your parents met early, married early, had you early. They weren't that much older than you, were they?
Dad was 19 years older than me.
19 years.
19 years.
So when you graduate from high school, you're 16. I guess that would make him 35. And you're looking out at Bossier High as the valedictorian addressing the throng there. And you see your mom and dad, and what do you think?
How old they were. I thought to myself, they don't know anything. They're too old. They were 35 and 34. I remember seeing them and think that I wrote that in the book. I gave the graduation speech, and I thought, how old they are, man.
Wow. And how did they meet?
They came from, they were about the same age and came from plantations, farms, about 7 miles apart, and they went to a common school called Elm Grove, and they graduated from Elm Grove High. It's still there. I passed by it Saturday. I was in Shreveport, and I passed by their school. It's a wooden school and had about 100 people in it. Mom and Dad were two of those people.
Your affinity for your mother is apparent in every way. You're right, standing 5'1" and weighing 92 pounds, she let her light brown hair grow long down to her waist. She wore it straight, often pinned with a hairpin atop her head. She was a beautiful woman in every way, wasn't she?
She was. She died this year at 92, and she was always gracious. Everybody loved Mom. Dad was in fights with people all the time, but Mom would settle Dad down and keep peace in the family. I would say Dad, I read about this, was antisocial. Mom was social to the fullest.
But your dad rose to high levels in politics, too.
It amazed me, because he wasn't suited for that. He was always antisocial. He wasn't bad to people, but he was his own man. He was very independent. I think Dad wanted to enjoy running for political office. He would have been good at it, but it never happened. He was a very distant person, very difficult.
You also have a chapter in the book about pool and poker. You had varied interests.
Yes. We had a pool table when I was young, about 8 or 9. It was first class. It wasn't one of these modern pool tables that have no balance.
Yeah.
It's a slate granite base. And Dad loved pool, and he taught my brother and I how to play. I played at Harvard. I was a pretty good player of great renown. The second thing Dad taught us was poker. Poker is a game to be studied. It's a lot to poker. And you know what you have, but the other guy doesn't. And your job is to fool the other guy. I played poker with Tip O'Neill, you name it. I played poker with them. George Bush, I played poker with the best in America.
Who was the best poker player you ever encountered?
My brother, Danny.
Yeah?
He is known still at Harvard to this day by taking the pants off the Boston boys. Danny was great.
The book is Scopina, a memoir of home, Charles E. Buddy Romer III, former governor of Louisiana, elected governor when he had just turned 44 years old, 30 years ago. It was October of 1987.
But this 30 years.
30 years. But this is about your early years. And you note that one of the catalysts for everything else that happened was a tragedy of sorts that could have been much worse. Your father, in August of 1956, had an accident. What happened?
It was a plane he was flying in that would look over the farm, the plantation, the crops. And coming into land, he had a a lapse of control and hit the ground from about 200 feet. He laid up in the hospital for weeks. My brother and I were in swimming at Scopina, and we ran down the runway to where Dad crashed at the end of the runway. And I remember staring at him in his seatbelt with gasoline pouring over him and blood. And I didn't think he was going to make it, but he did.
You were 12 at the time.
Yes.
He was a tough guy, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was tough. Tough as I ever saw. He was not a burly man, but he was not slight like me. I weigh 148, 150 pounds. Dad weighed about 210, same size, 5'8", but very strong, very thick, very well made.
Was he an imposing presence?
Yes.
To his kids as well?
Yes. We respected Dad. He spanked us occasionally, but he never hit us. But we respected him. And when he would walk in a room, he wasn't a big man, like I said, 5'8", 5'9", but he would control the attention of the room. I noticed it years later when I saw Dad as commissioner of administration, and I knew what his power was. He was awesome.
Well, it's quite a book from Buddy Romer, Scopina, A Memoir of Home, and it's about his first 16 years of life, a graduate of Bossier High, valedictorian, went off to Harvard, but it was all put in motion by what happened in his early years. Come Saturday the 23rd, 1 p.m. at Books A Million Town Center in Baton Rouge. And next Thursday the 28th, 6 p.m., Barnes & Noble City Place. You can meet Buddy Romer if you haven't met the governor, and he will be there with pen in hand to sign a copy for you of Scopina. Thank you, Governor, for sharing
the
story.
Thank you, Dan. It was very well done.
My honor. And coming later today, another governor, the current one, John Bel Edwards, will be here for his monthly show, Ask the Governor, at 2 o'clock. So 2 o'clock today with Governor John Bel Edwards. Tomorrow on this show, Bob Mann, the Manship School of Mass Communication professor, former aide to John Brough and Russell Long and Bennett Johnston, and columnist for NOLA.com. He will be here to talk about some of his recent columns and also about the latest revelations regarding Bill Cassidy being at the forefront of trying to repeal and replace Obamacare. And we'll talk with Bob Mann about the Greek system at LSU as well. Daryl Hunt sent an email with our discussion about the Greek system, and I tell you, it's a little long. We'll read it tomorrow when we're with Bob. Until then, for Hallie Baltazar, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening to Talk Louisiana, and stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.